Good morning, and welcome to Simply Politics from China. It's Monday, May 13th. On today's show, Japan's interest rate hike gains political momentum, and the ruling party's heavyweights weigh in. Plus, an interview with a Singaporean political scientist on Lawrence Wong's unique path. This coverage and more, up next. I'm David, and you're listening to Simply Politics from China. We start off with a significant statement made by Katsunobu Kato, a prominent figure in Japan's ruling party. He has stated that the conditions for normalizing the Bank of Japan's monetary policy have been met, indicating growing political support for further interest rate hikes. However, he also emphasized the need for the Bank of Japan to monitor the economic situation closely and coordinate with the government on when to raise interest rates. To discuss this further, we have Michael with us. Can you elaborate on Kato's statement and its implications?
Certainly, David. Kato's statement is significant as it signals a shift in Japan's economic landscape. He noted that Japan is transitioning from an era where prices and wages hardly changed to an era where prices and wages are rising. This suggests that the country's economy is experiencing inflation, which typically prompts central banks to raise interest rates to keep the economy from overheating.
And what role does Kato play in Japan's political landscape?
Kato is a senior member of the ruling party and has previously served as the chief cabinet secretary. Some analysts even see him as a potential candidate for future prime minister. His views on monetary policy are therefore influential and could shape the Bank of Japan's future decisions.
So what are the factors that the Bank of Japan will consider when deciding whether to raise interest rates?
According to Kato, the key to deciding whether to raise interest rates is Japan's economy, especially consumption, which he notes is not necessarily strong. This suggests that the Bank of Japan will need to carefully assess the strength of the economy and the level of consumer spending before making a decision on interest rates. It's a delicate balance, as raising rates too quickly could stifle economic growth, while waiting too long could let inflation get out of hand.
Thanks for your insights on walking that fine line, Michael. And speaking of political transitions, Singapore is set for a significant one as Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong is set to resign on May 15th. Deputy Prime Minister and Finance Minister Lawrence Wong is expected to take over as the new Prime Minister. This transition comes at a time when the world is shifting from globalization to post-globalization. To delve deeper into this, we have Celeste with us. Can you tell us more about this transition and its implications?
Absolutely, David. This transition is indeed significant. Lee Hsien Loong's government has, over the past 20 years, leveraged Singapore's role as an international economic and financial hub in the era of neoliberal globalization. However, the world is now facing uncertainty such as great power competition, continuous conflicts, and the rise of protectionism. The policy choices of the new government under Lawrence Wong will lay the foundation for Singapore's development direction in this post-globalization world.
And what can we expect from Lawrence Wong as the new prime minister?
Lawrence Wong, who has been a civil servant for a long time, is known for his stability. However, in his new role as prime minister, he will need to break through this stability, actively face challenges, risks, and uncertainties, and fully utilize the flexibility and resilience that Singapore possesses as a small country. This will be crucial for Singapore to navigate the changing global environment.
Thanks for the update on Singapore's political landscape, Celeste. Shifting our focus to China now, ahead of the third plenary session to be held in July this year, the Chinese Communist Party, or CCP, has been convicting fallen officials of associating with political swindlers. This move, combined with the Five Anti campaign proposed by Chen Yixin, Minister of the Ministry of State Security, has led analysts to speculate that a major political swindler may be unveiled at the third plenary session. To discuss this further, we have Abby with us. Can you shed more light on this situation?
Certainly, David. The CCP's recent actions suggest a concerted effort to crack down on corruption and political swindling. The party has been investigating and expelling officials like Jiang Hongli, the former vice president of the Industrial and Commercial Bank of China, on charges of associating with political brokers. This is a new crime that the CCP has added to its list of offenses. It's believed that this crackdown might culminate in the execution of a high-ranking official, possibly a confidant in Xi's army, by the Dragonhead Guillotine.
What exactly is this Dragonhead Guillotine?
The Dragonhead Guillotine is a metaphorical term referring to the CCP's method of dealing with high-ranking officials involved in corruption or political swindling. It signifies a severe punishment, possibly even execution.
And how does this tie in with the Five Anti-Campaign proposed by Chen Yixin?
The Five Anti-Campaign is a proposed initiative by Chen Yixin aimed at combating corruption within the party. The recent actions of the CCP, including the conviction of officials for associating with political swindlers, seem to align with the objectives of this campaign. It's possible that the campaign will be a key focus of the upcoming third plenary session.
Thanks for your insights on this significant time for Chinese politics, Abby. And with that, we wrap up our stories for today. Thanks for listening to Simply Politics from China. We'll see you back here tomorrow.